I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
I knew it. I love when he does that.
Wrestling has more than one royal family.
Adrenaline in my soul. Something, something, Cody Rhodes.
Tribal chief around here. Yeah, you see me, the tribal chief. That's right.
On time. But let me go ahead and tell you.
Shut your bitch ass up.
Look how far we've come. You're still here. This is us. These are my confessions. Still going strong. Yeah, man. Let it go.
Somebody save me, me from myself. I spent so long living in hell. They say my lifestyle is bad for my health. It's the only thing that seems to help. All of this drinking and smoking is hopeless, but feel like it's all that I need. Something inside of me's broken. I hold on to anything that sets me free. I'm a lost cause. Baby, don't waste your time on me. I'm so damaged beyond repair. Life has shattered my hopes and my dreams. I'm a lost cause. Baby, don't waste your time on me. I'm so damaged beyond repair. Life has shattered my hopes and my dreams.
Was missing a moon. There were no shooting stars to use wishing on you. And all of my sorrows, I just washed them down. It's the only peace I've ever found.
All of this drinking and smoking is hopeless, but feel like it's all that I need. Something inside of me's broken. I hold on to anything that sets me free. I'm a lost cause. Baby, don't waste your time on me. I'm so damaged beyond repair. Life is shattered, my hopes and my dreams. I'm a lost cause. Baby, don't waste your time on me. I'm so damaged beyond repair. Life is shattered, my hopes and my dreams.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to episode 409 of the Hoots Podcast on our road to 500 episodes. How's everybody doing? It's Thursday, April 18th, 2024, as I'm recording this live from the Break Free Room here in Chicago, Illinois. Hope each and every single one of you are having a wonderful day and a wonderful week so far. Can you guys believe that WrestleMania was already 2 weeks ago? Like, it's gone by so fast. Which is kind of a double-edged sword for me because right around the corner on May 7th, I'm turning 30 years old, and I'm ready for it. I'm not nervous. I'm not worried about it. I am a little nervous about it, but we'll see. Oh, man. So we'll see. Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, we got a fun episode for you guys, as we usually do. We are on the road to 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, so make sure to hit the like button and subscribe to our podcast, anywhere you get your podcast from. Also, please follow the show on Spotify. That would really help us take our show and podcast to the next level. Make sure to follow us at the Hoots Podcast on Spotify. And speaking of podcasts, I gave out the information last week, but I got some breaking news for you guys. I've been working on this project for about a month and a half, and glad to announce that tomorrow, myself and Robert Reyes will be releasing our pilot episode of the Resilience Podcast, and I'll put more information as the weeks go by where you can find a podcast and stuff like that. But I recorded this pilot episode for our new podcast last Saturday. And I've been excited about this project. It's going to be a little different from what you get from here from the Hoots Podcast. But it's a collaboration thing. So it's the Hoots Podcast in collaboration with Rob's media outlet known as ARCG Media, and it's called the Resilience Podcast, and it's going to be around about discussion about life, networking, mental health, sports, a little wrestling here and there, and this is actually a fun little opportunity for me to do a little something different that you get from here. You know, I think you guys kind of got used to my cadence now after, you know, still supporting us after 400 episodes. I think you guys, I figured you guys kind of know the flow of how these shows go. Not that is a bad thing. I'm very grateful for those who still give a, you know what, about what I have to say about professional wrestling. But it's going to be nice to break up the schedule within my professional career, and this is going to be an opportunity to be more vulnerable on air about real life stuff that I haven't really expressed yet on this show. And I've been vulnerable and honest with you guys a lot of times, a lot of different occasions. This project is going to be it's going to be interesting. Now, this podcast is not going to be a weekly thing, just due to the schedule that me and Rob have on our own separate projects. But this is something that we could do either once a month or every other week. And we'd love to have some guests down the road. We could continue on and have some fun with it. But I'm very excited for it. We recorded this last Saturday morning, and it was a very deep and cathartic conversation, and one of the conversations that I'm very proud of that we got to pull off last Saturday. And for those who are wondering, the debut pilot edition of the Resilience Podcast drops tomorrow at noon Eastern. So same places where you can find this podcast, Spotify, what, Apple Podcasts, what, anywhere, what, make sure, if you guys could do me a favor here, please follow the podcast here at the Resilient Pod. That is the Resilient Pod. Pretty simple ordeal there. And for those who want to follow my work, you can follow me at the Hoots Podcast on Twitter. And I'm also on Instagram at Josh Lopez Music. So wanted to spend this first part of the show kind of let you guys know what's up with me and my professional life and stuff like that. And I'm really excited for you guys to check out this first episode that we recorded last week. And I hope this is a project that's, you know, educational. It's beneficial for those who listen and watch our shows. And hopefully you can take something positive from it. There's going to be times where we have uncomfortable conversations and topics that people are kind of afraid to have on platforms like this. But I promise you, it's going to be insightful. Me and Rob are straight shooters to a fault. And it's not something that we're going to be doing to put an act on or anything like that. This podcast is going to be very special due to the authentic nature that myself and Rob have as human beings and also within my media life. Like, I don't hold back for shit. And, you know, I want to make sure that this podcast is positive, that we have fun with it. I don't want it to become, like, depressing or anything like that. But it's going to be real, and it's going to be raw at times. Not the wrestling show or anything else, references, get your mind out of the gutter. But I'm really excited for this project, and I'm excited for you guys to check it out. So the debut edition of the Resilience Podcast drops tomorrow at noon Eastern. And I'll share it on my pages, and I hope you guys give it a shot. I appreciate it. I appreciate all of you for rocking with us here on the show. This week's episode is getting very interesting. We are just about a week away from the WWE draft. France, the PLE Backlash in Lyon, France, which takes place on May 4th, a couple days before my birthday. That's right around the corner as well. Plus, speaking of pay-per-views, there's a pay-per-view coming up this Sunday. AEW presents Dynasty, their inaugural Dynasty pay-per-view from the dump known as St. Louis, Missouri. So we'll get to previews of that show later on and what the hell is wrong with AEW. Little spoiler alert, as Paul Heyman would say, if you guys are expecting me to go off the handle and go off the way I did last week, I'm sorry to disappoint you beforehand, but I think you're getting a little different vibe from what the hell is wrong with AEW this week as opposed to last week. I think last week was like completely rock bottom for me, and I'm like, all right, I don't give a shit whether this show is on my TV screen or not, and I express my disinterest in their product as the time's gone on. But also noting the fact that I didn't want to do the segment anymore because if I not get paid to cover AEW, if I don't want to watch AEW, I'm a grown adult. I can do what I want. And I, in a lot of ways, like Brother Carter, the only reason I'm still watching AEW is for you guys. And that's not for me to knock anybody that loves AEW or has podcasts about AEW or like an AEW sycophant on X every single day and defending every move that Tony Khan does and always has to base their opinions on the supposed hate that they get. Look, man, I see through the bullshit, and nobody wants to say it. I don't want it to fail. I don't want to go out of business, but I've never seen a promotion hoodwink a media conglomerate like AEW does with the wrestling media. It's like their Teflon in a lot of ways. And they are the masters of the bill of goods. And that's what it is. And that's what it's going to be. So we'll get to that later on, make our predictions for that. We'll wrap up the show like we used to do with the Back Porch Q&A session. By the way, for those who are watching live, if you have any questions for me, it could be about wrestling, it could be about life, it could be about sports. I will talk a little bit about sports later on because we do have a new edition of the Clown of the Week to get to as well. And we got a very interesting conversation to have in this week in WWE. My God, it's not been 2 weeks and people are already calling Cody Rhodes the worst WWE champion for the most semantical reasons and just nonsense takes that I've seen out there, which I'm not surprised. Not like I've been telling you all this since WrestleMania 39, and it's like clockwork. wrestling fans are so predictable in the way they ebb and flow about who they want to support, who they want in this position and that position. And it's very nauseating after a while. So we'll get into that as well. But I did want to spend this first part of the show, let you guys know what's up with me, let you guys in on this new project that I'm working on. And I am excited for you guys to check out the debut edition of the Resilience Podcast. Tomorrow. It's going to be very cool. I'm looking forward to it. So with that being said, when we come back, I'll get into what happened this week in WWE. We'll talk about Raw and SmackDown. We'll talk about the debut of Tama Tonga. I think you guys are coming to the right place to listen to a wrestling talk this week, because I happen to cover a lot of Tama Tonga's work over the years in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I can probably give you a perspective that a lot of people who claim to watch New Japan Pro Wrestling won't give you, at least properly. So we'll do that and do a little preview for the NXT Spring Breaking show that's taking place next week as well, and talk a little bit about Cody Rhodes here on the Hoots Podcast. Don't forget, guys, this is our final leg of our show. We are 91 episodes away from 500, and like I said, at episode 400, 500 will be our final episode. So hope you guys are appreciating these final episodes here, and I'm open to any suggestions, open to any guests that they want to come on this show. And I do appreciate you guys who are still rocking with us to this day. It really means a lot to me, so thank you. I really do appreciate you guys. So with that being said, when we get back, we'll get to our first segment of the podcast this week, otherwise known as This Week in WWE, right here on episode 409 of the Hoots Podcast. Welcome back, everybody, to the Hoots Podcast, episode 409 and number one in your heart. Let's address what I just talked about as I threw into our first break here. There's a reason why I titled this week's episode as Bottom of the Third. Obviously, we're going to talk a lot about the Bloodline in this segment and on this episode this week. With Tama Tonga now joining the group, and what's to come with how Solo Sikoa was treating Paul Heyman last week, and et cetera, et cetera. But we do have to start with the face of the company and Cody Rhodes. This has been a topic of bevy of debates and IQ reducing threads on social media and a lot of YouTube videos. I don't know if the topic of Cody Rhodes is more to spark clickbait. And, you know, there's a lot of content creators. I'll never begrudge somebody if they want to become a wrestling content creator. But the market is definitely oversaturated. The market is flooded with clout chasers, and the market is filled with people who don't come talking to you all from a genuine point of view. And it's difficult at times for myself to kind of gauge what the actual pulse of the wrestling audience is in 2024, because half the time they want something this week and then they want something else the next week when they got what they were bitching about the week prior. You know what I mean? And like, it's not anything new. Daniel Bryan said it as a promo. I've mentioned it here ad nauseum about how fickle wrestling fans are. I mean, you could see a fickleness towards a wrestler's push or a promotion as the cows go home. Now, on my end, I've not fickle with AEW. I've been kind of consistent with my criticisms and perspective on the promotion since it started. But, you know, what a big thing that we've been talking about here on this podcast, especially the last couple years, given what happened at WrestleMania 39, and now coming out the heels of WrestleMania 40, here we are. It's April 18th. We're barely 2 weeks into Cody Rhodes being the undisputed WWE champion. And I'm already seeing tweets. I'm already seeing videos. I'm already seeing people going back and forth with each other on Twitter on the merits, the reign so far of Cody. People are pointing out the way he's holding a championship. And I can't say that I'm at a loss of words. I'm more in a position right now where I just want to throw my hands up in the air. And I'm like, what the fuck do y'all want at this point? And again, I apologize for the language, but I have to be upfront with it. What do you want from him? Now that he's finished the story, now you want him to not be the champion, to not be the face of the company. Now you want Roman Reigns on your TV screen. Now you're okay with his part-time schedule. Now, what is it? Now, because Cody finished his story, now he has to turn heel for him to be appeasing enough to you or interesting enough to you? It's difficult enough to develop a sustainable good guy babyface in this society as it is. Regardless of its pro wrestling, music, any form of entertainment. I think really what draws people in within entertainment these days is authenticity, right? And whether or not you think Cody comes off as a politician or disingenuous or whatever, if you're like this big time Cody Rhodes haters and, you know, people who are just the only way the WWE operates is if Joe Enoa is the undisputed WWE Universal Champion. Look, and in this segment, I am not going to knock Roman Reigns because I was acknowledging the guy kind of overboard a little bit at last week's episode. But what I will say is that the company can thrive without Roman being the champion right now. And I think there's some Bloodline fans that are so fixated on the title can only be on Roman and nobody else that they're going to go out of their way and not Cody. Every single promo he does, every match that he does, the way he dresses, the way he talks, the way he holds a championship, what he posts on Twitter, the fact that he takes time after these shows to shake hands and kiss babies and have the autographs and everything. Regardless of everything that you want to say about Cody Rhodes, this version of the American Nightmare is somebody that is authentic and somebody that you can relate to. Yes, the story is finished. Then what? Right? That's always that infamous question that wrestling talking heads have and wrestling fans have after, you know, they opined for months and months for this thing to happen or else. Oh, this person needs to main event WrestleMania or else. Okay, they win it and then what? It's a shoulder shrug after. Oh, Kofi Mania needs to happen. Guess what? He becomes the champion and nobody gave a shit a couple months after. Yeah, in some cases you could blame the creative for not keeping the title reigns interesting for a prolonged period of time. And then you have situations like Bryan Danielson, who I don't care what anybody says, that guy was force-fed that world championship. And if it wasn't for CM Punk walking out of the WWE in 2014, Daniel Bryan would have not main evented WrestleMania that year. And then, you know, he unfortunately suffers that neck injury and has to relinquish the championship. here we are now, 10 years later, Cody Rhodes. We go into this WrestleMania season, and everybody's like, Cody has to win or else. You know, Cody has to finish the story. Oh, Cody is buried if he loses to Roman Reigns. Oh, if Cody, if Roman Reigns defeats Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania 40, Cody should go back to AEW. All these narratives, all these pontifications. He wins the title. Here we are 2 weeks later, and we're having silly arguments on social media about the way he holds a championship and the way he talks and the way he moves around the ring. And I'm like, this is what you wanted. This is what you wanted. Now the Cody crybabies are now Bloodline fans. Now the people that are like saying Cody has to win at WrestleMania or else are now 2 weeks later saying that, oh man, I can't wait for Cody to lose the championship in a couple of months. Those are the same people that will go out of their way to bitch about titles being hot potato in a scripted sport. I'm not one of these people that goes out of their way to throw it in people's face that wrestling's fake because it's not fake. I respect this industry. I respect the men and women who bust their ass to put their bodies on the line and take time away from their families to entertain us. This shit is not fake. At the same time, I have never watched or analyzed this product as if it was a legitimate sport. And I'm not going to start now. So yeah, is there a scenario, if you can make a sense storyline-wise, where Cody loses the championship before SummerSlam? I'll be up for it. But what I find very interesting in a lot of ways is that, especially on Twitter, people will start these movements for performers to be put in a certain area in the promotion or level of the card. Once they get there, it's like, okay, we move on to the next flavor of the month. And for Cody, like, still getting big pops. Pop at the Raw, at the WrestleMania. Massive pop in Canada, in Montreal. You know, usually Montreal is a good gauge for the smart mark hardcore wrestling fans, right? If they see through a character or they're like, oh, this is being force-fed down our throats, blah, 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 blah. I'm pretty sure that narrative is going to be coming in a couple months. Oh, my God, Triple H is forcing Cody Rhodes down our throat. I know that's coming. Oh, my God, Cody Rhodes is the new John Cena. We got to boo him, and we got to force him to turn heel. I see this all coming from a mile away. I can say that because I'm very observant about things in life. That's a trait of mine that could be a pro and a con at times. But I am very observant, and in a lot of ways, I could be a step ahead of people when it comes to how things are going to come to the forefront on certain situations. And I'm not here to tell you today that I'm like Robin Williams from Aladdin, and I could visualize the future and get it correct 100% of the time. But I am very observant of patterns. I'm very observant on people who don't carry themselves from a genuine point of view. And I'm also very observant of, you know, things that I can see through. You know, like I was saying earlier about AEW and Tony Khan, I see right through their messaging. It's bullshit. It's bill of goods. There was a time when Cody was in AEW that I was highly critical of the presentation, and I did not care for the way he went about things, and the vibe of Jeff Jarrett and TNA was resurfacing on Turner Broadcasting stations, and I was very critical of that whole stuff with the American Nightmare Family stuff. I was not a fan of Cody in AEW. I thought it sucked. The story with Dusty is something that is very important and is something that we should not scoff at down the road 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Having that story in the way it played out in the time that was given to play out is something that is a rarity and not a norm in professional wrestling in 2024. And I guess it could be a valid question. What is Cody Rhodes without being on the chase to finish the story, right? Okay, Cody finishes the story, and then what? You know, I think for me, that question went out of my head when I was in the Rosemont Horizon, and I'm pointing this way because I have the lanyard that I got from the Hell in a Cell PLE I went to a couple years ago with my Uncle Jeremy, where Cody, early in the week, tore his pec and ended up having one of the biggest historical matches and performances, not only in WWE history, but professional wrestling history as well. And that night in that performance shattered any of my doubt of how Cody would be perceived by the audience by the time he finished the story. And that's kind of the interesting thing about Cody Rhodes in WWE. It's literally now 2 full years since he's been back in the promotion. And the running conversation amongst people on social media, people who do shows like this, people who do podcasts, is always about when or how the fans are going to turn on him. And I always found that to be, I wouldn't say an interesting perspective, but I always wonder why it always revolts back to that. Like, why are we anticipating for people to turn on the guy when evidence showed time in, time out, month after month, PLE after PLE, that this guy is over within the character that he's presenting right now as a babyface. Wasn't it something that he had over $1 million of merchandise sales over WrestleMania weekend? I'm not coming here this week on the podcast to glaze over Cody Rhodes, but I am a content creator, and I'm also somebody that has to call out force-fed narratives. And I guess in a way you call me a wrestling auditor, because all this stuff 2 weeks in, after over a year and a half of bitching about Cody Rhodes finishing the story, not finishing the story, he has to finish the story or else. And then 2 weeks later, we're already talking about a fantasy booking ideas of ways for him to lose the championship. Will people still care whether or not Cody has a match with The Rock whenever The Rock decides to grace his back with his presence after shooting these next two movies? All this stuff, all these different questions. And here's the thing, there's nothing wrong with asking questions, but why are we jumping the gun on whether or not he's having a good title reign or not 2 weeks in? And the basis of your argument is the way he's holding a championship? Normally, I would just say it's fickle nature, but to me, honestly, it's idiotic nature. So I want to get that out of the way first. Let's talk about the Bloodline. Speaking of Cody, Cody did lose to Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 39, as Paul Heyman recapped in full detail on SmackDown last week. And, you know, there was a lot of pokey fun at Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns about their analogy of the fact that Roman's title reign was in the bottom of the third, right? And the Bloodline story itself is in the bottom of the third, and, like, we're not done yet. And they kind of touched on it a little bit after the night one WrestleMania press scrum. And yes, Roman Reigns did lose the Undisputed Universal Championship at WrestleMania. But the story of the Bloodline is not done yet. It's just getting started. So they come to the building. They're not. They find their old locker has been replaced by Cody Rhodes. And Kratos is like, "Your guys are not allowed to come in." And there's a broom closet down the aisleway. I thought that was pretty funny. Heyman comes out, like I said, he recaps WrestleMania 39. And the differences of how Roman Reigns carried himself in that match as opposed to what happened at WrestleMania 40. A lot of loose ends tied in, teases of what could happen down the road with Roman and Seth Rollins. You know, Heyman's first saw saying that, you know, accountability is a big thing within the island of relevancy, right? And he's like, they don't blame John Cena. They don't blame The Undertaker. They don't even blame Jey Uso. But in a roundabout way, they are blaming Seth freaking Rollins for costing Roman Reigns the Undisputed Universal Championship. And I thought that was interesting. You know, is it something where we do see Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins at WrestleMania? And I found it very interesting, you know, when they had that little interaction with Kevin backstage, Heyman goes to Jimmy and Solo, and he's like, you know, there's consequences for winning and losing. If you want to get your locker room back, we have to get the title back to the Bloodline. And then not even like 30 minutes later, they're in the ring, Heyman's giving his explanation, and he's like, you know, but like a phoenix rising up from the ashes. And, you know, he's about to go and sing about how the tribe chief will go back to capture his crown and the Isle of Invincibility. He goes, yada, 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 right? Solo stops him and he's like, there's consequences for winning and losing, right? Right? And you feel the tension rumbling, right? And Heyman's like, yeah, there is consequences for losing. From there, Solo looks over to Jimmy Uso. Jimmy's facial expression is always killing, man. That guy's hilarious. Jimmy's like, are you serious? You're about to blame me? Yeah, Jimmy, you did lose to Jey Uso at WrestleMania. And he got speared off the stage in a way that kind of set the tone of the Tribal Chief losing on night two. So we figure, okay, Jimmy's going to be taken out of the Bloodline. Solo gives Jimmy a hug for a second. This is all a ruse. You know in the back of your head that Solo's going to give him a devastating Samoan spike. But it doesn't happen. Another person in a black hoodie attacks Jimmy Uso from behind, and it's Tama Tonga, formerly a Bullet Club, GLD, Gorillas of Destiny, a never open weight champion, a guy who had stellar performances in the G1 over the last couple years, also cost Jay White an opportunity in his final G1 before he left New Japan. A guy that was a founding member in the Bullet Club. Like I said earlier, gazillion time tag team champion, winner of World Tag League multiple times, and a guy that could talk his shit. The first time I saw Tama Tonga was at a Wrestle Kingdom, and I believe it was WrestleMania. Not bad. It was Wrestle Kingdom 10, the first time I saw G.O.D. And the thing with New Japan Pro Wrestling, you know, after their events, they have post-match comments from each wrestler following each match. And from the first time I heard Tama Tonga speak, and, you know, you always hear about these wrestlers here and there on social media. They like the new flavor of the month. People are getting high behind these performers. Like, for example, right now at NXT, a lot of people are hyping up Javon Evans. And I'll talk about Javon later. He's very impressive, right? But, you know, sometimes, especially for someone like myself, I want to say, like, I'm fully jaded towards the industry as a whole. At the same time, though, like, you know, you hear about, oh, this guy's the second coming of this. This guy should go to this promotion. This guy is the, you know what? You know, some people call him, you know? and they attach all these adjectives and perspectives on certain performers. And you're like, okay, let me see it for myself, right? And Tama Tonga was getting a lot of praise for his promos. So I turned it on, see his first promo, and I'm like, damn, where has this guy been on my TV the entire time, you know? And seeing the evolution of him as a performer, coming out of the tag team, coming out of Bullet Club, going on his own journey, you know, having matches with Shingo Takagi on Wrestle Kingdom, like I said earlier, winning the Never Openweight Championship, pushing guys like Okada and et cetera to the limit. You know, this guy was killing it, man, as a solo act for a couple of years, actually, before he decided to join WWE. You know, had the rivalry with Carl Anderson while Carl just came back to the company. Carl was recently on Busted Open talking about Tama Tonga, which I thought was very interesting. If you guys haven't seen that interview, go check it out. But from my experience covering Tama Tonga and seeing how he carried himself during that segment and also later on in the show where he's like, by orders of the tribal chief. I'll get to that line in a little bit, but I do want to start off strictly with Tama Tonga. Obviously, the writing's on the wall that Tama Tonga would fit perfectly in the Bloodline. And I got really excited. And I was genuinely, genuinely happy for the man that plays Tama Tonga, the character. And I get it. Tama Tonga is not technically related to the Bloodline. But he has the look. He got a tattoo that's kind of Samoan written over it. He has the attitude. And more importantly, he has the intensity and physicality that matches what comes from the Bloodline. And there's so many questions now. What does this mean now that Solo turned on Jimmy? How does that affect Roman? We got to hear Jay's little comments about it. On Raw this week, and he said basically more or less that he always opened his arms to his brother and they could go back to being the Usos. So that's something to look out for. But in the nature of the attack and the fact that Solo snatched the cell phone away from Paul Heyman as he was about to call Roman Reigns, I thought it was very interesting. And the nature of the intensity and purposeness behind Solo and Tama Tonga during that segment, during the backstage when Heyman was checking out Jimmy in the trainer's room, and it's all about this by orders of the tribal chief. You've heard this phrase a lot over the last couple of months, especially by orders of the tribal chief. Now, who is making those orders? Well, I have my idea. Who's responsible for taking Jimmy out? Why are we not hearing anything from Roman Reigns? Why is he not advertised for this week's show? I know, he's filming a movie right now. I'm not stupid. But by orders of the tribal chief and consequences coming from winning and losing, I don't know how it's not The Rock behind Solo's new attitude. I don't know how it's not The Rock that brought in Tama Tonga, even though he's not technically related to the Bloodline. And targeting Heyman along the way. It has to be The Rock. And, you know, there was a question out there. You know, we had the interaction with Cody and Rock after the first Raw at the WrestleMania, right? And people expect, like, hey, yeah, down the road, we'll get that Cody and Rock match. But I had the questions. I'm sure everybody else had the questions. Okay, what's going to happen with The Rock? How will he respond towards Roman Reigns? Yeah, they won the tag match. But Rock is big about sticking true to his promises, right? That's a big thing, right? It's also kind of a Taurus thing too. I'm kind of the same way too. I'm about my actions and staying true to my promises that I make to people, right? But to think about it, it has to be The Rock behind that attack. And if this some angling towards a bloodline real civil war, tribal combat, war games match, whatever you want to do, we're in for some fun shit, ladies and gentlemen. And yes, The Rock was not in Detroit, Michigan last week for the SmackDown after WrestleMania. But The Rock, in his own way, seeming to assume power as the tribal chief, asserted his orders, and Solo and Tama Tonga will align themselves with The Rock, which will also add, which will make Roman pissed off even more, not only targeting your wise man, attacking your cousin, who's like more of a brother to you, plus the other guy that you said on live television would be next to the throne of being the tribal chief, is now with your other cousin, who's trying to take your spot because his name's The Rock and he thinks he can do whatever he wants because he's the final boss. You can call it predictable, you can say whatever you want, but one thing's for certain, bottom of the third, we're just scratching the surface of what this bloodline story is, and I'm here for it. So let's put a tip to the cap there. We had a couple of qualifying matches, triple threat number one contender qualifying matches, which saw LA Knight defeating Santos Escobar and Bobby Lashley, and AJ Styles defeating Kevin Owens and Rey Mysterio in a very fun main event. Tomorrow night, as I'm recording this, will be LA Knight against AJ Styles in WrestleMania rematch. Whoever wins that match will go on to face Cody at Backlash in France. I believe it'll be AJ Styles. I just don't believe yet that you put in a position where LA Knight wins, and then people that are already like wanting Cody to lose championship are really gonna like harp on for LA Knight, and I don't think that's just something that you want to do to both guys. I don't think that's a win-win situation. So have AJ win the match, and if anything, have somebody distract LA Knight. You know, maybe Logan Paul, somebody. But personally, seeing Cody and AJ on a PLE would be very, very good. And it could be a one-off. I'm not saying these guys have to feud each other for the next couple months or whatever. We don't know what the landscape is going to look like. I don't know what new changes that we're going to get with the WWE draft within the new era, the Paul Levesque era, or as I would like to call it, the acknowledgement era. You know, we might get some new rivalries. We are going to have a shakeup of the rosters. So things are up in the air. So to have Cody and AJ as a one-off at Backlash, it's going to be dope. Doesn't harm AJ in the loss, and it's a fresh match that we haven't seen. And it's not guaranteed that these guys are going to be feuding with each other for multiple months. So I don't have a problem if it is AJ Styles and Cody Rhodes at Backlash. We had the new revealing of the new World Tag Team Championship belts, which was presented to the Austin Truth this past Monday on Raw. I like the design, folks. I think it looked really very nice. Very, very smooth, if you will. You know what I mean? R-Truth, he's so fixated on saying that Triple H looks like Tommaso Ciampa, and it's hilarious, man. But yes, Miz and R-Truth are your new World Tag Team Champions, and they'll be defending the titles next week against DIY, who won that number one contenders triple threat match over the New Day and the Creed Brothers from this past Monday's Raw from Montreal. By the way, I gotta give a shout out to the crowd in Montreal this week. You guys were fucking fantastic, man. The entire show. I was looking at some of the airtime matches there. I would say that I was unsure whether or not the episode would be good this past Monday, but you guys delivered on all fronts. And I know a lot of people are putting over the new production changes from Lee Fitting, and rightfully so. But really, the MVP of that show, from my opinion, from this past Monday, was the fans. And they're almost eating everything up on that show, man. You know, great to see Sheamus back on our screen, ready for seeing the dish out some barn burners. I know some people are like, oh, Sheamus should go to AEW. For what? To lose to fucking Orange Cassidy? Yeah. Let's have Sheamus go to AEW so he loses to Pockets, Dan Klansen, and Daniel Garcia in a 3-week span. What? I need Sheamus to go to AEW to be Lance Archer miniature edition? Like, come on, man. I just don't see that at all, honestly. No. But I am happy to see Sheamus back on my screen. I really liked the promo with Cody and Jay. It was like a nice full circle moment, you know. Really was really changing the gears for Cody towards the world of WrestleMania was the fact that he brought Jey Uso over to Raw. And that tag team, the moment that they had at the press scrum, the heating, I like the Star Wars kind of elements that Cody had in that segment where he's like, hey, Jey, one more thing. Until we heat again. I love that line. I thought that was fantastic. But Cody was hyping up Jey Uso. Jey will be fighting Damian Priest for the World Heavyweight Championship at Backlash. Jey had a tune-up match with Finn Balor on Raw this past Monday. We have two more Raws before Backlash, I believe, right? Yeah, we got the 23rd. No, yeah, we have two more Raws before Backlash. We got the 22nd and 29th, April 29th. So, yeah. Don't mind me. I've had a very long day, so I'm trying to make sure I got all my P's and Q's right here. But, yes, two more Raws before we have Jey Uso and Damian Priest. I'm sure they'll have their time to talk shit to each other either next week or the week after that. But in the same nature of Cody and AJ, I'm also excited for Jey Uso and Damian Priest, a different style match. And again, I would not assume it's anything being a 3-month program right now. We're having this pay-per-view, we're having the draft beforehand, and then once we get out of France, we'll get into new rosters, new feuds. And we, again, as Triple H said, and everybody's been saying ad nauseum now, a new era in WWE. So, we had that. I want to talk about this really quick. I'd be remiss without wishing and having a prolonged recovery to Rhea Ripley. Really bummed out to see that she had to relinquish her title this past Monday on Raw. Very sad to see that. You don't want to see that, especially for a talented and wonderful woman like her, coming off the heels of a big victory at WrestleMania. A lot of discussion about, you know, Liv Morgan and the whole Liv Morgan revenge tour. Unfortunately, Rhea suffered an injury during her brawl last week, which forced her now to relinquish the championship. She kicked off the show on Monday, basically saying that when she comes back, that she's coming for blood. Liv's out there, you know, a lot of people are either storyline pissed at her or legitimately pissed at her or the fact that Rhea got injured. Look, it sucks. It does. I'm not going to lie about it. It does. Rhea was really hitting her stride. And I was actually looking forward to her and Liv actually having a real feud with each other. And that's going to have to wait. Just like we got to wait now for Drew McIntyre and CM Punk. I know right now the roster is out in Europe having a international tour. And Drew McIntyre still can't help himself. Even after CM Punk cost him the championship at WrestleMania, he's still talking shit about the guy and trolling him on these house shows. It's hilarious. But, you know, there's a lot of undue or unjust hate being thrown towards Liv Morgan. And you can use it as a way to turn heel. I think she dropped a new t-shirt yesterday that says cry about it. So I think we're going to get something different for Liv Morgan. They advertised that there would be a new women's champion crown on Monday. I don't know what that means. Is it a match? Is it a tournament? Is it a gauntlet match to determine a new champion? Is it a fatal four-way eliminator? Is it a battle royal to crown a new champion? Like, there's a lot of things up in the air, but I mean, strike when the iron's hot there. I know a lot of people are like, oh, just have Becky come back and have her win the championship. You can do that if you want. But I think right now, strike when the iron's hot. She already took Rhea out of TV for a while. Have her go all the way with it. Have Liv win whatever match that we're going to see on Monday and have her become the new women's world champion. That really pissed people off. And I want to give credit where credit's due. Kudos go out to Bully Ray for this idea. Having Liv, you know, in a way seduct Dominic Mysterio and have her sneak her way into the Judgment Day and be like, now I'm your mommy. I think Dominic would fall for it, to be honest with you. So, I want to give credit to Bully Ray on that idea because I think that would work very well, actually. So, Liv Morgan, revenge tour continues on, as she's saying, because she says the tour ends once she becomes the new women's world champion. So, we'll see how that plays out. And then, to wrap up the thoughts from Monday's show, Sami Zayn and Chad Gable. Fantastic match. I know a lot of people are very giddy over the entrance that we saw on Monday. Shout out to Lee Fitting and the crew. Very, very cool. One of the cooler shots that you'll ever see for a big time match on TV for wrestling, for sure. And you felt the energy for the crowd too. It was really cool. And Sammy's got that aura that CM Punk has when he's in Chicago. You know, very few performers can have that aura when they're in their hometown and it's like next level shit. Sami Zayn's got that now. And good for him. He deserves it. Sami and Chad had a tremendous match. Sami did indeed retain. Sami's out at ringside celebrating with his family. Chad Gable attacks Sami Zayn from behind, gives him a German suplex on the floor. Kind of does this like hanging ankle lock where he's standing on the corner post. He's standing on the turnbuckle bars actually, and he's like holding on as Sammy's like really writhing in pain. The referees are taking their sweet ass time to get Chad off of Sammy as the show goes off the air. So yes, I did see the turn coming a mile away, but I thought it was effective for what it needed to be. So all in all, I really liked this week of television because we had some new layers of development within the characters throughout the show, both on the mid-card side and the women. And at the same time, I feel like there's a little bit of anticipation for the draft. We have some nice matches being added to this Backlash show. And, you know, what happened on Friday with the Bloodline and Tama Tonga now joined the group. We're in for some good stuff, ladies and gentlemen. And I know that CM Punk will be part of the WWE draft coming up next Friday. The draft will start on the 26th and then end on the 29th. So SmackDown and Raw will have the two nights of the WWE draft. And we'll see how that one plays out. It will. Last thing before we go to our next segment here in This Week in WWE. We'll go to this. The little preview for night one of NXT Spring Break. And they did this last year. It's a two-week event, televised. So this is the lineup for night one. We have Roxanne Perez against Live Valkyria versus Tayda Paxley in a triple threat match for the NXT Women's Championship. Blair Davenport takes on Sol Ruka in a beach brawl. The D'Angelo family will be taking on the No Quarter Cash Crew in a six-man tag. We'll have a contract signed with Lola Vice and Natalya for their match on week two of Spring Breaking. And then the main event coming up on Tuesday will be Ilya Dragunov versus Trick Williams for the NXT Championship. If Trick loses, he will leave NXT. So I'm pretty excited for it. There's some good matches on the show. And by the way, Dave Meltzer, go fuck yourself. I apologize for being so blunt, ladies and gentlemen, but seriously, go fuck yourself. Like, this guy is one of the biggest clowns I've ever seen in my entire life. He's spending his time on his stupid-ass radio show with Brianna Alvarez saying that Trick Williams is not over and Tayda Paxley sucks and all this stuff. Dude, you being the senior consultant of AEW Creative is not somebody that we should take seriously as far as your wrestling perspective. Please, know your role and shut your mouth. So I need to get that off my chest. But on that note, that is what happened this week in WWE. But the fun continues here on the podcast at Hoots. And it's time to get into our next segment here on the podcast, otherwise known as the Restaurant Quality Edition, a segment that's worthy enough of being worthy for an Emmy, in my opinion. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time once again to take a trip down what the hell is wrong with AEW. Let's start this bad boy off in a 3, a 2, a 1.
Your meat, beat, your meat, beat. Your meat, beat, 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 your meat.
I'm telling you, my time is right now. Right this minute, 2022. We're living it. My time is now. My time is right. God damn now.
And what intensity. The quality of the product and the quality of the shows is at an all-time high right now. But I do know that it's a real war between AEW and WWE.
I'm still cashing fat checks, and I am still banging the hottest bitch in this entire place.
It's time for What the Hell is Wrong with AEW.
Fuck this shit, I'm out. Mm-mm. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
No thanks.
Don't mind me. I'ma just grab my stuff and leave. Excuse me, please. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Nope.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
All right then.
I don't know what the fuck just happened, but I don't really care. I'ma get the fuck up out of here.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, time to have some fun here. What the hell is wrong with AEW this week? Well, I'll say this. I always run into these situations where we have an edition of What the Hell is Wrong with AEW where, like, I almost pop a blood vessel and how stupid that their decision-making is and their optics and their lack of self-awareness and stuff like that. And then the following week's programming, at least I only watch Dynamite. I don't watch Rampage or Collision anymore. But it's always like the next week's Dynamite is like a show like, okay, not too bad. Not too much where I want to rip my eyes off. Like it's interesting how it works like that sometimes. But I'll be honest with you guys. There's stuff on the show last night that I really enjoyed. I really did. You know, there are things that we'll get into as we usually do. you know, the fact that we need rah-rah speeches every week. You know, it's interesting. Tony Khan had a media call today with members of the media to hype up Dynasty. And basically, if you ask Tony Khan right now, everything is fine. But I find it interesting when people are doing rah-rah speeches and talk about all the great things about AEW, and you have the other members with blue check marks from the wrestling media defending their every single move. Everything is not fine. It's like that gif of that dog in the fire setting. Like, you're putting a blind eye to, oh, everything's fine. There's nothing to worry about here. But is that really the case? Before I get into the stuff that I like and doing our preview for Dynasty and the extra impression and all that, I do have to get this off my chest. The Hook, Chris Jericho, and Taz segment last night was grade A, homogenized, Holstein, guaranteed U.S. cellular, my team sucks ass bullshit. That segment sucked. This angle with Hook and Chris Jericho sucks. Everything Chris Jericho's been doing now for almost 3+ years now that I'm counting this has sucked. No, Hook does not need to be mentored on TV by Chris Jericho. And you drag Taz into the ring just to shove him down? Who gives a shit? Like, Chris Jericho comes off like that hobo uncle that you haven't seen in 10 years. He comes up to you, hey, nephew, let me impart some wisdom on you, man. I got you, man. I got you. You can trust me. I got the advice that you need. This uncle that you haven't seen for 10 years, he's up to no good. He has nothing of value to offer to you, but he's still coming to leech off of you. That's the vibe I get from Jericho now. And I'm like, I feel like I'm becoming a broken record here on these segments. But seriously, I don't need to see him on TV anymore. Go home. Now. ASAP. Andale. Wasting everybody's time. It's like watching Chris Jericho now on my TV is like having to sit through a John Fox press conference. If you're a Bears fan, you'll understand that reference. Please stop the pain. You're killing me. You really are, man. That segment was fucking horrible, man. It's not even making Hook look good either. It's stupid. But before we get to the rest of the show and the stuff that I did like on the show, I want to play a little comment here from Eric Bischoff from this week's edition of 83 Weeks. It's a discussion that I've had on the show with you guys about the misconceptions of WWE performers coming to AEW and guaranteed having instant success. So let's play this clip from Eric Bischoff from this week's edition of 83 Weeks. Check out this podcast. It's very, very good. Here you go.
I do want to talk more about that because I have a theory that I really do believe this. I think on some level, Tony wanted AEW to look more like ECW and less like WCW. And I understand why people immediately make the comparison because there's more money behind it. It's well funded. It's on a Turner channel. Even the name Dynamite sounds like Nitro. Like, I get it. But when you hear Tony talk about his wrestling fandom, he always talks about, you know, when his dad took him to the ECW arena and. He just holds ECW in such high regard. And I can't help but wonder, had he leaned more into that and less into the WCW style of presentation and the roster and all of that, do you think this could have looked or felt a little differently? Or is this all just, hey, he grew up reading The Observer, so he's making the type of show that he thinks Dave likes and maybe not everybody else likes it?
You ask a couple of different questions there. You made a couple of different points. So let me start at the end.
I think Dave Meltzer's influence over Tony is there.
Yeah.
And I think it's undeniable. And anybody that knows the people involved and knows what's going on behind the scenes, to deny that is to deny reality. And people tend to want to do that a lot. So have at it. I don't give a fuck. I believe what I believe. So I didn't say I know what I know. I just believe what I believe because I'm smart enough and been around the industry long enough and know the players, at least regard to Dave, well enough. I absolutely believe there's a significant influence. Maybe not on a day-to-day basis, but a significant influence. And it's horrible. I used to say whatever Dave Meltzer thinks is the right way to go, do 180 and you're probably going to be right. The guy has absolutely, talk about no fundamental understanding of the wrestling industry. He knows the history of it better than probably anybody. And if he would stay in his lane, he would be an asset to the industry, I believe. But Dave tries to impart his broader knowledge of how to get people over and what's good for television and what works and doesn't work on people. And some people, unfortunately, people like Tony, buy into it. I think in Tony's case, based on things that I've heard him say or read him say, I should say, to be more clear, he was very much impacted by ECW. And that's going to have an influence on you. Just like AWA had an influence on me, the style of wrestling, the general presentation in that time had a big impression on me. So there's nothing wrong with that. But when the essence of your question was, could it have been differently? Abso-fucking-lutely, and that's the part that pisses me off.
Yeah.
That is the part that pisses me off more than anything. And it's not about me hating Tony. It's not about me hating AEW. And for God's sake, you fucking idiots, it's certainly not about me hoping people lose their jobs. Fucking clowns. It's about a missed opportunity. And it was, he was there. Tony had it. If he would have come out and said something like, I'm not suggesting he should have said this, but something like, you've got WWE, they're great. If that's what you like, they're great. But this is what we're doing over here. And we support them, but we're doing this over here. Accentuate the difference and the alternative nature of what you're about to present by putting over the 800-pound gorilla, not by trying to chop him down. Because you're immediately taking that audience and turning them either immediately against you or subconsciously against you. Because you're basically telling them you shouldn't like what you like. That ain't how you get over, brother. That's not how you get your brand over. That's not how you maximize the good fucking will that you were gifted with. Because you came up with this idea to launch AEW at an absolutely perfect time. There could not have been a more perfect time than to launch AEW and Dynamite than October or whatever it was of 2019. Fucking perfect. The audience wanted an alternative. But Tony came out of the chute throwing fucking hand grenades. Wouldn't get in the fight. Wasn't about to go head to head. But man, he didn't shy away from cutting down WWE. And by default, the audience that watched them. It's mind-boggling to me. What's even more fucking mind-boggling to me is he's still doing it. His business is cratering. Okay, cratering is too strong of a word. His business is deteriorating at a rapid pace. Now, don't give a fuck about Wembley because it's an outlier. Your television ratings are deteriorating. Your live event business, well, you don't really have a live event business other than your live TV production, Dynamite, Rampage, Collision, whatever. The numbers are right there for the world to see, Tony. Everybody sees it, evidently, but you. Wake the fuck up while you still can. Because this approach of throwing rocks at WWE and talking about how these companies hate each other. You don't think that coming from you, Tony, that that's not going to incite more of the tribalism that you so desperately complain about? You're fucking creating it. and you're blowing what's left, and there's very little left. Don't believe me? If you're listening, go to Wrestling Inc. Today, go to Wrestling Inc. and look at some of the comments on anything Tony Khan posts. 85% of them are way more negative than anything I've ever said. Yes, you get your small handful of supporters, but that audience is getting smaller and smaller and smaller in social media. Ant Evans on Wise Choices, we took a pretty good look and deep dive into the last 6 months of AEW's YouTube performance. It's crashing and burning. This is like fucking watching Olympic cliff diving. And he's still doing it. That's the part that just, I'm beyond disappointed. I try really hard. I look for positive things to say. Like, I'm excited about the Motor City Machine Guns potentially coming to AEW. Part of me is excited because they're really talented guys. They're really good guys. I've had a chance to work with them. Nothing but a ton of respect. But at the same time, I'm going, those poor fuckers. They're just, I hope the money's good. And that's a common thing that I hear.
Well, that's...
All right. I wanted to play that, you know, in a way to kind of follow up to what I was trying to express last week. And I know that a lot of people are harping on the whole CM Punk footage and whether it's the right decision or not. But the fact that this clown has gone on his way to double down on the decision and point about how great Matthew and Nicholas Jackson have been as heels and throwing in Okada, like, it's just showing a lack of self-awareness and reading the room. And for me personally, as somebody who covered New Japan extensively for a lot of years, I have a pit in my stomach when I see Okada associated with the Bucks and how the majority of New Japan pro wrestlers are presented in AEW. Just the relationship in the way that New Japan and AEW's gone on. Good on Impact Wrestling for having some balls and some merit to be like, no, we're not just going to let you run roughshod over our entire promotion just to make yourself look good, which is basically what AEW's been doing to New Japan this entire time. And it's a damn shame. It really is. Of course, Okada's going to be a great wrestler. Yes, Okada would be a great fit on any roster that he's on. But to attach yourself with these clowns, the Hardy boys with bad mustaches now, and this inept booker just doubling down on everything that he's doing. Everything is great. We have no problems, nothing to worry about. Yet he's taking all his advice from Dave Meltzer. And I think Eric Bischoff right there in that clip that I played for you guys perfectly encapsulated everything that I've been trying to express here on this show for the last, what, 4.5 years now? But nobody wants to listen, right? I'm talking out of my ass. I'm a hater. I just want to... or a ripoff Cornette. They do it to themselves. And the numbers don't lie. They don't. And I don't think the rating stuff is the end all be all, because we all know that Nielsen is a fugazi operation when it comes to actual stats like that. Anybody that went to a broadcasting school would understand that. But numbers don't lie. The numbers are flatlining. Yeah, you can throw in super cards every other month on pay-per-view and think that your business is going to the next level, but nobody's going out of their way to watch your TV every week. Hell, Dynamite was under 800,000 viewers again this week on TV. And guess what? I thought last night's episode was a pretty good show. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it, but I thought the show was decent. The crowd in Indiana was pretty good. You know, it's one of those cases where a show looks better than it actually was because of the crowd. And I think that's good for AEW that they had a great crowd last night. You know, I like the mixed tag. You know, Edge has been doing some good stuff on TV, so that was cool. Jon Moxley, even though I was ripping the whole rah-rah speech thing that they've been doing for the last month or so, I thought Moxley's promo was good. Congrats to him becoming the IWGP champion. By the way, as we talk about congratulations, congrats go out to Ruby Soho and Angela Parker. They're announcing that they're expecting the baby soon. I saw that last night after the show went off the air, so that's pretty cool. So congratulations. I think that's pretty dope, actually. What else did I like? I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. Just give me a second here. I liked the match with Mariah May and Deonna Purrazzo. I wouldn't say they're overexposing Mariah May because, hey, you have that chick on TV any time, any show you want, have her on TV. I have no problem with it, but she's been like on every show for like the last 2 months. So I thought her match with Deonna Purrazzo was cool. They're hyping up this match with Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm at Dynasty, which should be a good match. I thought that was cool. All the stuff with Samoa Joe and Swerve Strickland was good, especially the promo that Joe had with Renee Paquette backstage. I thought it was very good. So that was that. But that was pretty much it. I mean, you kind of got your typical stuff that you see on every edition of AEW Dynamite. You know, a trios match, which made the referees look absolutely stupid. It wasn't, much to the surprise of everybody, it was not the Dead Quartz ref out there this week. It was Paul Turner officiating the Elite match against Pentagon, Daniel Garcia, and Pac. What an odd, you know, it's like half Death Triangle mixed with Daniel Garcia. So I thought that was, I don't know. It's just an AEW trios match that's just all over the place, and it makes referees look stupid, and that's just not my cup of tea. So that was what it was. The Will Ospreay match with Claudio Castagnoli, very good. They gave him a lot of time. It was a very, very good match. But I think with the addition of the Hook Jericho segment, that, like I said, it was freaking brutal. The trios match that I just talked about, and this too, the over usage of the Don Callis family on this episode last night was almost a turnoff for me, where I almost gave the show a lower rating than I would usually give. I know that Tony thinks that Don Callis is this great heel manager that just resonates all types of heat in the world. And yeah, I think Don Callis, to a certain extent, is good at his job. But if you could answer me with a straight face and tell me that you generally give two shits about the Don Callis family, I don't know if I'll believe you or not. I don't know. So, like, they had this group out there like five different times throughout the show, and like they're building up this feud with the Blackpool Cuckold Club and the Don Callis family, aka the House of Torture USA edition. And like, who gives a shit? I don't. So, I know they're hyping up Will Ospreay and Brian Danielson. I've been saying this since Ospreay's joined AEW, that he does not need to be associated with Don Callis. I think it's freaking stupid. But it is what it is. So, all in all, I thought Dynamite was decent last night, and a much better improvement than what we had to sit through last week, because last week was a dumpster fire on all fronts. But as we usually do, as tradition here on the podcast at Hoots, what we usually do here as we wrap up the segment, as we do our excrement impression. And what we're going to do right now is go into right now. So here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Let me take a swig of water before I get into this, okay? Yeah, here we go. coming to you live from the Chavis Arena this Sunday on April 21st. It's AEW Dynasty live from the Chavis Arena in St. Louis, Missouri. Here's your matches. First on the 0 hour, we have Matt Sydal taking on Trent Beretta. Then next, the winner takes all match for the AEW World Trios and Ring of Honor World Six-Man Tag Team Championships. It's the Acclaimed taking on the Bullet Club Gold. And going into the main card, first the Trios match featuring Adam Copeland, Eddie Kingston, and Mark Briscoe take on the House of Black. From there, an FTW rules match for the FTW champion. It's the champion Hook taking on Lionheart Chris Jericho. Next, for the AEW International Championship, it's the champion Roderick Strong taking on his former best friend Kyle O'Reilly. From there, it's a house rules match for the AEW TBS Championship as Julia Hart takes on Will Nightingale. Next, a match made a couple weeks ago on Dynamite for the AEW Continental Crown Championship. It's Kazuchika Okada. I'm sorry. I love Okada. that was not intentional to say Kaka. I'm sorry. Next, for the AEW Continental Crown Championship, it's the champion of... Oh my god, that was not intentional. I'm sorry. So, for the AEW Continental Crown Championship, it's Kazuchika Okada taking out the Bastard Pack. For there, it's a ladder match for the vacated AEW World Tag Team Championship. It's the Young Bucks taking on FTR. From there, a special grudge match for the AEW Women's World Championship as Timeless Toni Storm takes on Thunder Rosa. The next match here, a dream match featuring Will Ospreay and Bryan Danielson. And the main event for the AEW World Championship, it's the champion Samoa Joe taking on Swerve Strickland and Prince Nana. More matches to be announced. Make sure to follow TonyCon on Twitter at TonyCon. And go get all your AEW tickets right now at awtix.com. Repeat, that's awtix.com. Woo! I don't think I just got all that out. Oh, holy shit. All right, let me make some predictions for this Bunch show here. Okay, I'm going to go with Copeland and Kingston and Briscoe because, you know, they always try to hype up the House of Black, but they never win matches on pay-per-view. So I'm going to go with the good guys there. I think Hook retains over Chris Jericho. I got Roderick Strong defeating Kyle O'Reilly. I think it's too early for Kyle to just take the title that easily away from Roderick Strong. I think it'll be a good match, though, but I'm going to go with Roderick Strong on that one. Hopefully that's not the match where people are just sitting on their hands, but I think that could be a possibility, and I am throwing that out there. But I got Julia Hart retaining over Will Nightingale. I think this is where Chris Statlander turns on Will Nightingale, helps Julia Hart win, and Julia Hart will go on to face Mercedes Moné at Double or Nothing. By the way, Mercedes looked pretty good last night. I'm not going to lie about that. If I were to cover this pay-per-view on Sunday, and I'm not, this is probably the match I'd be looking forward to the most here. Okada and Pac, it's going to be a tremendous match, but I do think Okada will retain over Pac. I think the Young Bucks beat FTR, unfortunately, which is really interesting because Dax Harwood has been one of those people that have been glazing Tony Khan for the last couple of months and going super defensive on anybody that criticizes AEW without an agenda behind it. I wonder how he's going to feel the same way when he loses to the Young Bucks and they re-signed for practically nothing. So, yeah. I'm going with the Young Bucks to become your new AEW World Tag Team Champions. I believe Toni Storm will defeat Thunder Rosa. I got Will Ospreay beating Karen Danielson. And I know Samoa Joe gave Swerve Strickland the Muscle Buster to wrap up Dynamite last night. But I am going with Swerve Strickland to defeat Samoa Joe and become your new AEW World Champion. So those are my predictions for Dynasty. This should be a pretty interesting show. Like I said, I am not covering this pay-per-view. But if I were, there are a couple of matches on the show that I definitely would like to type out if I had the opportunity. But go check it out. This is AEW's first Dynasty pay-per-view, and I hope it works out for them. All I know is that we got another Tony Khan press scrum to look forward to, and I'm saying that with 100% sarcasm right now because I'm not looking forward to that. But Ladies and gentlemen, I pose a question each and every single week, and I'd love to hear from you guys. Folks, what the hell is wrong with AEW?
This has been What the Hell is Wrong with AEW.
Fuck this shit, I'm out. Mm-mm. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
No thanks.
Don't mind me. I'ma just grab my stuff and leave. Excuse me, please. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Nope.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Alright then.
I don't know what the fuck just happened, but I don't really care. I'ma get the fuck up out of here.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Alright, what the hell's wrong with AEW's in the books? That means we got one more thing to do before we get to our main event here. Ladies and gentlemen, I didn't get to do this last week, but we are going to do it this week because, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to crown a new winner of the Clown of the Week.
I'm not Clown. Clown, Clown. Constant Clown. Clown. You're big Clown. 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 Clown.
One more time for goodness.
I'm not Clown. Clown. Constant Clown. Clown. You're big Clown. 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 Clown.
Oh, man, we got a lot of suggestions this week for Clowns of the Week. You know, Chris Aletta sent me one with video this week, and it happened to come from Tony Schiavone, where a lot of people were going after Tony and AEW over the footage release of that brawl with Jack Perry and CM Punk from All In last year. And since Chris was nice enough to send me this video, I'm going to play for you guys here. So Tony Schiavone is the first nominee and winner of the Clown of the Week this week. Let's hear this nonsense. Here we go.
I think it's hilarious. Not hilarious. I think it's probably apropos that people can take screenshots and assume anything from a screenshot. My facial reaction to what happened was my facial reaction trying to put more heat on the Bucks for being assholes within the storyline itself.
Right.
I did not have any reaction to the footage we saw because I don't give a damn.
And it's not like it was new for you.
No, that's right. So what?
Yeah.
So fucking what? So I was not upset at the promotion. I was not upset at Tony Khan. I was not pissed off about what we had shown. I was trying to be fully in the moment of the angle, which is the Bucks bitching about FTR, wanting to shake their hands and getting fucked around
right.
And everything. That's what I was doing. But of course, everybody wants to create their own story, and that's fine. That's what social media is about. Social media is about idiots coming together and trying to come up with their own ideas. So, yeah, maybe I was still upset about Bug. I don't know, but I didn't give a shit about the footage and still don't show it all you want. Okay. I don't give a shit. I'm sincere when I say, I don't care. I don't care. It has no impact on my life. Okay. Some people are saying, oh, the footage that you were showing is like the finger poke of doom moment for AEW. Well, you know what? That's what you want it to be because you want to see us fail. And there's no way, because I was in both companies, there's absolutely no way that you can compare us to WCW. You can't. You may want to. You may think you're right. You're wrong.
Oh, Tony, man. Oh, man. You almost had me there before you said that. You're right. You're nothing like WCW. They had balls. They actually went head-to-head with WWE. You're right. AEW is nothing like WCW. The fact that Tony Khan makes Vince Russo look like fucking Paul Heyman as a booker really tells you something, Klein. Yeah, Tony, yes, I know. You were there for both of them. Both of them are seeking chips, and you were unwilling to recognize it while it was happening back in the 90s, just like you are now. I almost was going to take you off this list because I was agreeing, because nobody should care about this footage. And then you had to say that. Whether it's the finger poke of Doom or not, I don't know whether that's true or not. But, yeah, you're nothing like WCW. You're worse. Take that. So, yes, Tony Giovanni is definitely added to the clown of the week. We got another one here from the good brother Patrick Fritz at Rated PWF. Shout out to my boy Pat. He says here, how about the clowns that are saying fat shaming Sheamus and all this stuff? Folks, go watch some of Sheamus's videos on his Celtic Warrior workouts and see if you can do that for yourself, and then get back at me whether you want to go after the guy for his physical appearance or not. As somebody who's been in the middle of a weight loss journey for almost a better part of a year now, it's not easy to cut weight like that, especially for somebody like him that hasn't been active in a ring for 8 months. Cool it down a bit. Show some fucking respect. Body shaming the guy. You wouldn't last 2 seconds in a ring with that dude. Shedding weight and all that stuff to get to where he was before he got injured, that stuff's not easy. So all those people were going after Sheamus this week. I thought that was stupid. And then for me personally, the biggest clown of the week goes to Kevin Scampoli and Joe Cronin. Two YouTube content creators, two absolute assheads and stunads for their idiotic, racist, sexist, and just appalling comments this week about Javon Evans, this fucking asshat, Kevin Scampoli, bald twat, is calling Javon Evans a slave, and then Joe Cronin saying that Denise Salcedo is only at her position in her career because she's having sex with people and sexualizing her. I thought we were better than that, but no. We got these two asshats that have a big following say stupid shit like that. Which is, like I was saying earlier at the beginning of the show, yeah, there's a lot of wrestling content creation out there. And there's a little bit too much. There's no literacy. There's no barometers of who should and should not be having these type of platforms. And having to see those two schmucks on my Twitter timeline all over the last couple of days, especially over the weekend, for their stupid comments, was like, it was an easy choice for me. Kevin Scampoli and Joe Cronin, you are the clowns of the week this week. Before we get to our main event segment, I do want to get some things off my chest about my sports teams in Chicago. We are a week away from the NFL draft, and I want to throw it out there for you guys because I was thinking about this earlier today. Like, when we did our draft special last year, it was one of my favorite episodes that we ever did on the Hoots podcast. I had a blast doing that episode. We had Sam, I think Brother Carter was on it. Pat was on it. I think Tony made appearance as well. It was a lot of fun. If you guys would like us to do another draft special next week, I'm open to doing it. It was a lot of fun to do that for night one of the NFL draft, but it is next Thursday. I'm curious, just as anybody else, to see what the Bears do. We need some positivity here in this city because our teams in this city absolutely suck. The Cubs suck. The White Sox are an embarrassment to life. Just end the season at this point. Turn that place into a parking lot. It's already a parking lot. Honestly, send the White Sox to Nashville. They don't belong in the city anymore. That's how inept they are as a franchise. My favorite baseball team is a freaking laughingstock to the country right now. It's embarrassing. Then we have my Chicago Bulls, where people are either shoulder shrugging or don't care over the fact that they won their play-in game last night over the Atlanta Hawks. practically kicked their ass the entire game. It was a fun game to watch last night. I am a Bulls fan at heart. I'd probably say besides the Bears, the Bulls are my second favorite team here in Chicago. And obviously, very inspired by The Last Dance. You see MJ behind me. Big Bulls fan, obviously. And they're going to be playing Miami Heat without Jimmy Butler. There is a good chance that the Bulls can make the playoffs. And I know a lot of people are upset with the direction of whether or not they should rebuild or not rebuild, blah, 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 blah. All I want for the Bulls for this playoffs is to make the playoffs and eliminate the Knicks from the playoffs. That's all I want. The Bulls don't have to win the NBA Finals. All I want is the Bulls to eliminate the New York Knicks from the playoffs. That's all I want. So, which is crazy because they got to go through the Boston Celtics first to do that, which that's probably not going to happen. But all joking around, this city does need something positive and something to look forward to. So I hope with the Bears picks next week for the draft that it's something that makes everybody happy and that we don't have to worry about bitching and stuff like that for the next couple of months before the football season starts. But yes, that is my thoughts on the state of Chicago sports right now. It's a complete and utter dumpster fire. But on that note, we've got one more segment to do here on the podcast this week, and it's time to answer your questions in this week's edition of the Back Porch Q&A session right here on episode 409 of the Hoots Podcast. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody, to the Hoots Podcast. One more segment to do here this week as we get ready to do our Back Porch Q&A session here. As always, if you have any questions, comments, questions, concerns, open to hearing what's on your guys' mind, thoughts, and souls here. It doesn't have to be wrestling related, too, especially for those who are watching live. You can ask me anything that you want. So let's get into it. All right. Shout out to the good brother Chris Zaletta at X Team Zaletta. X-Teens-Led24X on Twitter. Throw out the X for Chris. Thank you, Chris, for always being a consistent contributor to the segment this week. I appreciate you, brother. What up, Luce? Here's a question for the Q&A this week. How impressed are you with Javon Evans? Very, very impressed. I'm familiar with his work over the years, but to see the just crazy amount of athleticism that he has, it's just something to behold. I am really looking forward to going to my first NXT show at the Performance Center. Here's some breaking news, ladies and gentlemen. I am going back to Florida sometime in the beginning of June. And I'm very excited to go to my first live NXT show in Florida. And hopefully I get to see Javon Evans wrestle for the first time, so in person. But from what I've seen, the matches that I've got to cover so far, the one that he had with Ilya Dragunov out of the blue on Tuesday on NXT was fantastic. I'm very impressed by Javon Evans, and he's been killing it so far. Predictions for Dynasty, did it in What the Hell's Wrong AW. Any match you're looking forward to for Dynasty? Okada and Pac. I think Roderick Strong and Kyle O'Reilly would be decent, and also Swerve and Joe for the main event. That should be good as well. And I think the ladies' match would be decent as well. Did you catch Windy City Riot? I did not watch the whole show. I only saw the main event live with Moxley and Naito. I watched it after I was done with the SmackDown Trash Group last Friday, and I wanted to see the match for myself. No, I am not surprised that Jon Moxley defeated Naito. New Japan is basically bending their knees to keeping they're bending their knees to make sure that AEW keeps New Japan relevant, and it's a damn shame. So that's my thoughts on that. What else here we got? Thoughts on Gable Stern. Does he split from the Alpha Academy? Do the Creed brothers join him? Love the turn. Does he split with the Alpha Academy? Yes. Do I think the Creed brothers join him? Yes, on that as well. I think that Gable starting his new faction with the Creed brothers would be very good. They've all been losing some big marquee matches as of late. It makes sense. It fits well with the trajectory of all three guys. And I think it would work. I really do. So, you know, you can make Brutus and Julius like the new world's greatest tag team. Everybody already goes with the Kurt Angle comparisons with Chad Gable. So, I'm all in for it. I really do. Thoughts on the Drake, Rick Ross, Kendrick, and the Drake, Rick Ross, Kendrick back and forth stuff. Look, I'll be honest with you. I am not a fan of today's rap. It's piss poor at best, to be honest with you. And I'm very biased in the fact that 90s and early 2000 hip hop shatters this era of rap music to shreds. But I have had a chance to listen to the diss track from Rick Ross towards Drake. I heard like a snippet of Drake's diss, his initial diss. I haven't heard a Kendrick one yet, but I don't know. For me, I look at hip hop today and rap the same way that I look at boxing. I don't enjoy it as much as I did as a kid. So that's what I'll say about that. So there you go. Who do you think could benefit from going to NXT during the draft? That's a good question. Ricochet. I think he'd probably bring back Indy Hartwell. If they're splitting with her and Cancer Ray, I think Indy Hartwell would fit good back to NXT. Same thing with Shayna Baszler. Make her have a return there. Who else? That's a good question. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Those are the ones off the top of my head that I think would fit the best right now. I know she brought a lot. I know she brought a lot of outside success and eyes to WWE. Don't think Nikki Garcia can do it now for AEW. Why does she feel the need right now to try to possibly relive a moment that happened years ago with the Women's Revolution? Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know, Chris, to be honest with you. The stuff with Nikki Garcia and her wrestling takes these days are kind of hit and miss. Don't get me wrong. The Waterfall is still top tier and maybe even better with age. That girl is fucking hot. But I don't know. I don't know if it's the resentment in the way that they were treated after they got inducted into the Hall of Fame. The fact that either they didn't acknowledge her when she started that new show with Blake Shelton and Carson Daly. I guess she has some resentment towards WWE. I guess maybe that's the thing. As I've always said, AEW is the ultimate WWE rehab center for people that are upset with WWE. And if that's something that she wants to do, more power to her. I've always supported the Bella Twins. I'm a fan of them as human beings. And if that's something that she wants to do for herself, more power to her. So that's my answer for that. Let's see. Last question here. How deep family-wise, who else joins this Bloodline story? I know Jacob Fatu is next. Does Hikuleo eventually come into the fold? No to Hikuleo. Yes to Jacob Fatu. The only other outsider that I can see inserted into this just for extra measure is probably Zilla. But that's not even to like Royal Rumble time. We got a long time before we can make that an option. So yeah, off the top of my head, either Tongaloa or Zilla Fatu would probably be the other guys that I think could join the Bloodline. And it makes sense. You could have G.O.D. as a tag team there. Look, I think Hikuleo could work well in WWE. He does have the size and stuff like that. But who on Roman's side and the Usos' side wouldn't match going after Hikuleo? You know what I mean? I just don't see it right now, to be honest with you. So I'd probably go with Tangaloa. You've reformed G.O.D. within the Bloodline. And then you have maybe Zilla Fatu come out and help out the matters there as well. But Chris, I want to thank you for the questions this week, brother. As always, if anybody wants to participate in the Back Porch Q&A session, all you have to do is hit me up at Twitter at the Hoots Podcast or thehootspodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget, we got the debut episode of the Resilience Podcast dropping tomorrow at noon Eastern. Myself and Rob Aurelius, our first episode of our new podcast that we're doing together. Don't expect new episodes every single week. We're just getting this off the ground, and it's going to be a very different project, and I'm very excited for you guys to check out the first episode tomorrow. Like I said earlier, make sure to follow the show at The Resilient Pod right there to see it on the screen. And more information, make sure to follow me at Twitter at The Hoots Podcast. I'm at Instagram at Josh Lopez Music. I share some new guitar covers. One of them is actually the intro song for the podcast this week. So hope you guys enjoyed that. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Don't forget to like this video and subscribe to our channel here on YouTube as we're on the road to 1,000 subscribers. And don't forget, more importantly, if anything else, please follow the show on Spotify. It really helps us out. And it's not charging you any money to just press a simple follow button. I appreciate the support for everybody that listens to the podcast. I love you all. Have a wonderful weekend. Don't forget to be the authentic product that is yourself. And remember, nobody dictates the pace of your life but yourself and the man upstairs. I'm Joshy. This has been episode 409 of the Hoots Podcast. Hope you guys enjoy Dynasty this weekend. We'll recap it next week. And see what we have in store for us, not only for the NFL draft, but the WWE draft. A lot of crazy stuff going on in the world of professional wrestling, and we're here to document it right here on the Hoots Podcast on the road to 500 episodes. I love y'all. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to y'all next week. Yeet.
Bye-bye, bitch.